Every Sunday when you come in, you see that slide. And you probably don't think much about it. I wouldn't blame you. You see it every single Sunday morning. And this first Sunday night of the month, I wouldn't blame you for not thinking twice about it. I put it together, and I don't think twice about it, really. And so I doubt that you've at least regularly made the connection between being happy and the church. But there is a very strong connection between being happy, and Neil, I appreciate the song. Thank you. That wasn't a coincidence, was it? I didn't think so. There's a very strong connection between being happy and the church, being a member of the church, being in relation with other Christians. Very strong connection between those two, and we're going to see that tonight from Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4, very well-known passage. Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I will say rejoice. And so that's our text for tonight, though we'll be all over the book of Philippians. And so Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always, again I will say rejoice. It's a command to rejoice, which I find constantly fascinating. That joy is a command. Paul is commanding us to be happy. And recently, we talked about in another lesson the difference between joy and happiness. I don't think there is one. I think people try to make a difference between them. It's the same thing, and so I'll use them interchangeably. But happiness is a command. It's something that we're told to do, not something that we're told to wait on, something that we're told to hope for, but something that we're told, commanded, ordered by God to be happy, be joyful. And Paul is so serious about it in this verse, he says it twice, rejoice in the Lord always. And I'm going to tell you again to rejoice. Well, that demonstrates to me is that he's really serious about it. This is something that he very much wants us to do. In fact, he's so serious about it, he's already told them once in chapter 3 and verse 1. He's already said to rejoice. This is the third time that he's telling them to rejoice. The fact that he gives a command to rejoice tells me two important things. Number one, it's possible to do. Because God will never tell you to do something that you can't do. God will never expect something of you that you cannot deliver. The second thing that it tells me is that it is possible. If he says, I'm ordering you to be happy, then it's possible to be happy. It's possible to be joyful. It's something that you can do. Now, our response to that, very often, many circumstances, our response to that is, but, right? Rejoice. Well, wait a minute, but, no, Paul says, I'm telling you, rejoice. And we say, well, hang on a second. Let me explain why I can't be happy. Let me tell you why I can't rejoice. Let me explain to you what he did to me. Or what she did to me, or what they took from me, or what they put me through, or what I had but lost, or what I want but can't have, or what I'm suffering, or what I'm fearing, or what I know is going to happen, or what's already happened. So Paul, I see your command to rejoice three times, but let me tell you why I can't do that. Now Paul's situation assures us that we can rejoice. Because Paul is rejoicing, and in the book of Philippians, where is he? He's in prison. Why did he get there? Because of a false accusation. Who's trying to make him suffer more? False Christians. What is the possible outcome of his imprisonment? He is uncertain at this moment if he will live or die. And yet, he rejoices. And so Paul shows us that it's possible to rejoice. Paul's own situation demonstrates that. But there's a question, I think, that is a natural question to ask. I think it's the obvious question. I think, in fact, Paul's command to rejoice begs the question, how? How can we possibly rejoice? In fact, if we don't answer this question and we continue to labor under our unhappiness, this command will be a source not of joy, but of sadness. Because we see the command, we don't know how to do it, so how do we feel? Guilty. All right, we beat ourselves up. So we need to understand how to rejoice. If this command to rejoice is all by itself, it's of no help whatsoever. But it is not by itself. Joy is talked about in the book of Philippians 11 times. Somebody counted more than that. I don't know where they got that. I got 11. Maybe there's more. Anyway, there's a lot. It's double digit. Joy is talked about in the book of Philippians 11 times. All but one of those times says that our joy comes from the same source. I'll be honest with you, it surprises me. I don't know that I'd ever really counted up the number of times and the amount of times that he tells us where it comes from. I don't know until the last couple of weeks if I've ever done that. But when I did that, the source of joy was a big surprise to me. I did not expect that. So if I told you that there is a source of joy in the book of Philippians and 10 out of the 11 times it's the same thing, what would you think that it is? He says rejoice in the Lord, so God is the source. But now we need to find out, how is God going to provide that? If I asked you, out of 11 times, 10 of the times are the same thing, what would you say? Well, it's the Word of God. We get joy from the Word. Or maybe you would say, well, we get joy from prayer. Or maybe he's saying that the joy is going to come directly from the Holy Spirit. All of those would be great suggestions. None of them are right. None of those are the thing that he emphasizes in the book of Philippians. Now, the one reason that he gives that is not the main source of joy is this. And we'll just briefly mention this. But in Philippians 1, verses 12 through 20, Paul indicates that we can rejoice because things are always better than they seem. And isn't that good news? Things are always better than they seem. If Paul had gone by appearances, he would have been a very depressed individual. Because not only is he in prison on a false accusation, facing a possible death, but while he is in prison, there are Christians, there are preachers in the church who are trying to hurt him by preaching and converting people by their own work. And they're hoping that them preaching and converting people will hurt Paul's feelings. But what does Paul say? Paul said, I don't care why those men are out there preaching the gospel. As long as they're preaching the gospel, guess what he said? I will rejoice. I'm happy. Even though it looks like people are hurting me, God's cause is actually going forward. That's good news. And Paul says that I'm going to rejoice in that. But that's not the main source of joy. The main source of joy in the book of Philippians, the main place that you are going to find your ability to rejoice is in your church family. 10 of the 11 times that he talks about sources of joy, the source is other Christians. It is your church family. Paul says, and Neil, you had brought this up this morning as we were talking about 1 John, where he says, make our joy complete, or your joy, whatever that is, in verse 4 of chapter 1. But notice what Paul says in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 1. Therefore, Philippians 4:1, therefore, my beloved brethren, whom I long to see, my what? My joy. Where did Paul get his joy? Where did Paul receive his joy? By thinking about and leaning into and pursuing his relationship with the Philippian Christians. That's where his joy came from, and the same thing is true for us. Those four passages where Paul talks about joy that I've got on the screen, those four passages talk about the joy that we get from other Christians. The church, let's just be honest, can be sometimes a little less than a joy-bringing experience, right? Dealing with the church can sometimes be a little less than a joyful experience. Sometimes maybe we find the church experience a little boring. Maybe we find it a little stale. Maybe we're subjected to the same preacher Sunday after Sunday, year after year, saying pretty much the same stuff and telling the same stories, right? Or we're singing the same songs over and over and over. Or we're hearing the same prayer phrases, right, that we've heard all God, Garden, Direct, and all that we hear a lot. And sometimes maybe the church experience is just a little bit stale. Sometimes the church experience can be a little bit irritating. I mean, don't you ever say to yourself, if not to somebody else, I can't believe blank did blank again? You know, after you're together for a while, some people can, you know, some of the things they do maybe wear on you a little, be a little irritating. Sometimes the church experience can irritate a little bit. Sometimes the church experience can frustrate a little bit. I can't believe that they're still dealing with that. They're still doing that. They're still struggling with that. Sometimes the church experience can be downright painful because we don't always treat each other and think of each other and deal with each other the way that we should. But with the right attitude, the church experience can be a source of joy. I mean, this church, the members of it, the leadership of it, the preacher in it, this church will not always be in and of itself a joyful experience. But when we bring the right attitude to it, we can find it to be a source of great joy. Three things that we'll talk about for a moment, and then we'll be done. Number one, if you want to find joy in this congregation, find Christians you can rejoice in. Number two, if you want to find joy in this congregation, find Christians you can give joy to. And number three, if you want to find joy in this congregation, find an area for your own personal growth that will create joy. So let's talk about those three, beginning in Philippians chapter 1 and in verse 3. The Philippian church was not perfect. Sometimes people write about and talk about the Philippian church as though it didn't really have any problems. Listen, Paul would not be writing the letter of Philippians if the Philippian church did not have problems. All you have to do is read chapter 2 and know that the Philippian church had problems. Read chapter 4 and you will know that the Philippian church had problems. The Philippian church was an imperfect church. They did not always love each other like they should. They did not serve each other. And some of their members were even fighting with each other, and nobody was doing anything about it. Philippian church was imperfect. But when Paul thought about the Philippian church, what did he think? Philippians 1 and verse 3. I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy in my every prayer for you all. In view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now, for I am confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Christ Jesus. For it is only right for me to feel this way about you all, because I have you in my heart, since both in my imprisonment and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel, you all are partakers of grace with me. Was the Philippian church perfect? No. But it was a source of great joy to the Apostle Paul. In order for the Moorhead Church to be a source of joy for us, there are two things that we need to do. Number one, we need to focus on being grateful for the good things about it. We need to intentionally be grateful for the good things about this congregation. This church has, for many years, not only in the time that I have been here, but even in the years before I came, this church has enjoyed a great deal of harmony. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody gets along. Doesn't mean that everybody likes everybody the same, that everybody wants to hang out with everybody else, that everybody's best friends. But this church has been very blessed with a great deal of harmony. And if you've been around much, you know that that is not something to be taken for granted. I believe that this congregation has about as enjoyable and uplifting and encouraging services in the church as I have ever seen. This church has good energy. Our church services, our assemblies have good energy. They're happy. They're engaging. They are joyful. Right, they're upbeat. If you've been around much, you know that that's not always the case. This congregation offers to us a tremendous amount of good friendships and friendships, relationships where we love each other. This congregation has elders who care about it, who work for it, and deacons who serve it. This congregation has a serious commitment to truth. And I have no doubt that we don't always get it right. I have no doubt that sometimes we get it wrong. But you will never find a congregation that cares more about being biblically accurate than this congregation. And in this congregation, if you need help with something, you will find help. Somebody will help you whatever you need. We're not always perfect in that. We don't always do it exactly like we should. But if you need something and make your need known, somebody in this church will be there for you. And that's a pretty big deal. Now, is this church perfect? Not even close. There are a lot of things we need to do better about. Our level of participation in some things that we do needs to be higher. We probably need more teachers than what we have. Certainly, our personal work could use some improvement, and no doubt our personal Bible study could also use an upgrade. But there's a lot in this congregation to be thankful for. And so we need to have a mindset of focusing on what's good rather than fixating on what's bad, negative, irritating, or disappointing. Without being blind to it, be grateful for what's good. Secondly, find inspiring Christians who will help you to be encouraged. Find among the membership some Christians who are particularly inspiring to you. Whether it's Troy and Neil, who, even though they have full-time jobs and families, work hard as elders in our congregation. Obviously, Ray does too. I'm not leaving him out. But particularly encouraging when men still have jobs, they still have to work, they have obligations, and yet are working hard as elders. Sister Dora has a tremendous, tender, loving heart, reaches out, checks on people, sends cards to people, finds out what's going on with people, and is a tremendous encouragement. Brother Herb and Miss Billy Ann, constantly fighting health issues and and probably don't ever really feel great, but are constantly here, are active and engaged in what is going on. The young men of the congregation serve and participate and work for the congregation. The young ladies, in a day when being a young lady is extremely difficult, our young women are working hard at being what God wants them to be. Sister Mary, Sister Maria, they're just a lot of fun. I mean, they're just encouraging and a lot of fun, and you can't overestimate that. And so, not to leave anybody out, but just to point out that among our number, we have somebody that you can look to and watch and learn from and be encouraged by and find inspiration in. There are a lot of those people in this congregation. And so, find Christians that you can rejoice in. Secondly, find Christians that you can bring joy to. Because joy is not simply a matter of getting, it's also a matter of giving. If you want to be joyful, you must be a giver. You must be. Find Christians that you can give joy to. I think it's interesting in chapter 1 of Philippians where Paul says, you know, I'm facing possible execution. I don't know if I will live or die, but I feel pretty confident that I'm going to stay here because you need me to bring you joy. And then in chapter 2, he says, I'm going to send Epaphroditus to you, and when he comes, he will bring you great joy. The Philippians were having problems. They needed someone to bring them joy. And Paul says, we will intentionally do that. Who can you find that needs joy, that you can provide joy by serving them? Who do you know that might be struggling financially that you can help? Who do you know that might be struggling with their health and need some form of service? Who do you know that's probably struggling with loneliness and needs someone to talk to? Who do you know that might be struggling spiritually? When you look out and find these people among the congregation, make a plan and execute it in order to bring joy to them. When you come to church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, do you determine to bring the joy? When you come to church, when you're on the way, when you're getting ready, when you're thinking about church, when you get up in the morning, when you're driving to the building or wherever it is that we're meeting, do you determine to bring the joy? Do you determine to walk in? And sometimes that can be challenging, right? If you're running late, if you and your spouse had kind of got into it on the way to the building, you know, these things happen. And sometimes it can be a little bit challenging to bring the joy, but somebody has to bring it. Do you determine to bring the joy and walk in with a smile on your face and help other people to be joyful? This is what we need to do in order to experience joy in our congregation. The final thing is to find an area of personal growth that will create joy. Notice Philippians chapter 2 and verse 2. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 2. Paul says, make my joy complete. Paul wants more joy. Well, how are they going to do that? Make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Paul says, it would really make me happy if you would grow spiritually in your love for one another. If you will find an area of personal growth and commit this year to growing there spiritually, how would that affect your joy? How do you think it would affect the joy of your fellow Christians? How do you think it would affect God's joy in His relationship with you? You know, in the New Testament, there are several ethical lists, they're called. Several lists of attitudes and behaviors that we should avoid or that we should practice. Passages like 1 Peter 1, the Christian virtues. Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit and the deeds of the flesh. Ephesians 4 through 6, the evidences of the new life that Paul talks about, or 1 Corinthians 13, the traits of love. So think about this. Think, for instance, if you looked at 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and you looked at the traits in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and you picked one of those, and you decided that you were going to work on that, how would that affect your personal joy? Let's say that out of 1 Corinthians 13, you decided that you're going to work on your patience. And you're going to be more patient than you have been. And you're really going to work on not getting so frustrated, not getting so angry, not losing your temper so quickly, not having such a short fuse. Do you think that would help your joy? Do you think you'd be happier if you didn't get so frustrated so quickly? Of course. Or what if you worked on your resilience? What if you worked on putting up with other people and putting up with difficulties and putting up with hardships? Do you think that would make you happier? What if you worked on your hope? What if you increased your personal hope? Do you think you would be happier if you had more hope? I guess you would be hopier. Maybe that is how we can say that. But would that make you happier? Of course it would. And what about those around you? Do you think that people around you would be happier if you stopped talking so much about yourself and the things you were great at? Do you think people around you would be happier if you would work on being less rude, if that's something you struggle with? Do you think people around you would increase their joy if you decreased your anger? You see how that works? When we pick things to work on and grow in, we get happier. Other people get happier. Do you think it would make God happier if you worked on your joy in the truth? Or if you worked on your faith, your confidence in God? Or if you worked on not being happy about wrongdoing? You see what I'm saying? When we pick something that we need to work on and work on our personal growth, we get happier, people around us get happier, and God gets happier, and everybody has more joy. So if we want to have joy, we need to grow personally by looking at one of these lists, picking something to work on, and then growing in that over the coming year. So, rejoice in the Lord, Paul said. Again, I will say rejoice. It's obviously important. He told us to do it twice in that verse. He already told us in chapter 3 in verse 1. It's a command, so it's necessary. It's a command, so it's possible. It's something we have to do. How can we have joy? By having the right attitude about this congregation. By finding somebody that we can rejoice in and focusing on the good things about our congregation, and there are lots of them. By finding some Christian who needs help in our church and bringing joy to them, and by growing spiritually, personally, in our own lives. There is a very strong connection between being happy and this church. There's a very strong connection between your personal happiness and your relationship with this church. Your happiness will increase when you decide not only to grow personally, but to bring the joy to this church and to get the joy out of it that is already there. If there is some way that we can help you to increase your joy, if there's something that you're struggling with, that you need help with, and you're not happy with it, and it's harming your joy, it's harming your relationship with God, we want to help you with that. We'd love to help you by talking privately with you tonight or sometime that is convenient for you, or if you'd like, you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.